Hello and welcome to Offsiders. The coronavirus pandemic may have shut down the big money codes, but it has also had a crushing impact on community sport, from the inner city suburbs to the small country towns. For many, the local sports club is the lifeblood of the community. And with no after-school training sessions, weekend games and post-match celebrations, clubs have been left eerily deserted and struggling for survival.
Football in Mildura is supposed to start on Good Friday. It usually would be packed, really good atmosphere.
Big leap there. Imperial's looking for a snap by Fox, but it's been touched through.
Sometimes it's the only social interaction that people have with other adults throughout the week. It's a huge part of what we do throughout our winter months. It's more than the winning and the losing. It's going to create a lot of isolation and a lot of loneliness.
There's something really special about being involved in a sports club, and it's knowing that people will get around and support you. I miss the kids. I miss coaching the kids. I miss watching their faces when they master a new skill, when they finally got a left-hand layup in a game. I miss all of those things.
I'm currently the head coach of Meriden Soccer Football Club. I look over all the teams in the club, so there's about 40-odd teams in the club now. Finally had to tell them that we weren't able to train anymore. My heart just broke for them.
Townsend District Junior Rugby League. We've got over 3,000 junior players registered. We provide a good community base that kids don't have to be around the streets. They can be on the footy field. People have still got bills to pay, rates to pay. So, yeah, without an income, it's going to be very tough for a lot of clubs throughout Australia, really.
If families are losing their jobs, if businesses are shutting down, will families be able to afford to play basketball when all this is over? Will we get the players back? Will we have the numbers?
Sport will come back. This is not for long term. We're praying that it's not long term.
So the biggest sporting development of the week was the NRL announcing a return today. We are going to get to that a little later. But first, the effect that the coronavirus is having at grassroots level. Our panellist today from home, Paul Kennedy, joins us. He's a father of three boys and he's a suburban premiership playing coach and just about done just everything at the local community club. We've got Richard Hines, who, of course, is a regular panellist, but also a consultant in participation. And he tells me the vice president of the Edinburgh Cricket Club, VP. I might have to call you today. And Dr. Bridie O'Donnell, who joins us for the first time, a former cyclist who's competed at three world championships and is the director of the Office for Women in Sport. Bridie, welcome. What are some of the stories that you've been hearing in recent weeks about the impact that this is having?
The peak bodies across Australia that run sport across every different code are really in a dire financial state. We know that they've stood down staff for a month or even longer. Staff are taking pay cuts. They're looking at the same fixed costs but with no revenue coming in. So the impact actually on that layer of sport administration has been quite catastrophic. And now they're looking to what their solutions will be over 3 or 6 or even 12 months.
It's a really interesting factor how that will impact at my level, at the grassroots and club level, because sport over a period of time has become a real trickle-down economy. You know, the national bodies have taken more and more responsibility for the grassroots, and so that money flowing down is really important for us. It's a really eerie time of the year. You know, normally this would be the transition at our local oval from cricket to footy. The goalposts would be up and it would be a hive of activity. Now there's this eerie kind of silent exercising taking place, and we're all wondering what's going to happen. You know, how is it going to affect us financially? Will the families come back? Will the players come back? Will the sponsors be there? So it's a real time of uncertainty for community sport, just as it is at the elite level.
Paul, you're at the coalface there. What sort of conversations are you having, I guess, within the home, within your club and within the community about this?
Yeah, well, my kids were shattered. They play in no fewer than about 9 different sporting teams between the three of them. They were gutted when we had to explain to them that there would be no sport for the foreseeable future, maybe even missing out on an entire season. They came around pretty quick, as kids do, and they've been connected in some way with their teammates online. Some clubs are doing these things really well. But my great fear is for, at that level, with the children and their friends, not the sports mad kids, but the kids that have been in sport as a good habit for several seasons, maybe since they've been 7, 8, 9, and now they're moving well into their teens, and they might have a year off and think, you know what, I don't need to go back. So I think there's good opportunity there for all coaches and leagues and associations to reach out, stay connected, so that they don't suffer too much when play does resume.
We already see dropout rates in various cohorts at different age groups. We see kids dropping out at 13 and 14, particularly girls. We see new arrivals or people with disability already struggling to engage with sport and recreation in a really productive way. So that's my concern, is how is that going to impact people who don't have a wonderful dad like PK or don't have kids that are highly engaged in nine sports on a weekend?
And I think, Richard, we think of sports and we sit here every Sunday morning, we talk about the elite, don't we? But they're a minority when you just say the word, the definition of sport. I mean, the huge majority of participants are at that grassroots level. They're not getting paid, you know, they're running their canteen, they're coaching their kids' clubs, they're volunteering because they care about their club and they care about their community.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, personally, I went through a long period of maybe 20 years where I was covering elite sports. So, you know, you're off at Wimbledon or the Masters Golf or wherever, and you come to think of sport as elite sport, and a lot of people do. You know, you sit on the couch. And it's not, you know, to me, the most important by far level, by far, is grassroots sport. I mean, it's interesting just to build on what Bridie was saying, the work I'm doing around participation, it centres largely on kids between 12 to 16. There's so many alternatives now that I didn't have as a kid. I grew up in a country town and it was cricket and footy and, you know, tennis and golf and whatever. Now that, you know, we know the online component, there's other things that come in their way. It's hard as it was to keep kids going. So I wonder what this gap year might do, you know, just create this sort of void where kids might drift off a little. So it's up to us as clubs, and then I'll go back to my cricket club role. I guess it's up to us as clubs to reach out, stay connected and keep these kids playing, because it's so important.
And we talk about sport, but there's also active recreation and predominantly women engage in more walking, gym, Pilates. Those activities have been affected. We know a lot of kids go to camps. YMCA run a lot of camps across the state. And we also know a lot of self-funded amateur athletes, you know, triathletes, road cyclists, people who actually pay a lot of levies every year who can't do their activities. So it's quite a broad range of impact that it's having on the community in impacting on people's mental and physical well-being.
Paul, are they still planning for what might happen? I mean, are there administrators out there behind the scenes working away? Are they hopeful that there will be football and netball seasons so far this year?
The people I'm talking to have got no idea. And I think that's at least owning up to the fact that you don't know what's going to happen. I think even I spoke to a school team that I coach in Victoria, and they're saying, well, we hope we get one game towards the end of this season where we might be able to just get to pull on the jumper and have that feeling. So I think everyone's pretty pragmatic about what it looks like. They may not, if we continue to flatten the curve, they may turn around in August and say, well, you know, your football codes, you can play a few games locally. So I guess you've probably got to plan for that. It just goes back to the two really big things and two reasons you get involved in sport. One is connection and all that means. You can talk a lot about different aspects of that, but being connected with each other, and also that health and fitness. And Bridie touched on that. Health and fitness is huge, but there's really, being online and having the different facilities we do at the moment, there's no reason why you can't make a really big effort as a sports club to get your members keeping fit, notwithstanding, you know, the strong urge to snack all day and nutritional downside of that. But I've got a local rugby club that has been sending out a physical challenge for their kids. You know, write your name, and each letter of your name has a different exercise. Just do that, post it, and then the kids get a bit competitive online as well. You've got Lawn Bowls is doing the terrific Lawn Bowl challenges. It's just staying connected in any way, and using your online devices is the perfect way for that. It's that one up and above, that connection, keeping members and being ready to go if they do give the green light. And I think that's the big challenge. So I hope that people aren't just resting back and waiting for the big wigs to tell them what's going on. You've got to be proactive in the meantime and be ready to go when it's time to go.
Let's talk about the rural communities and the country towns, because sports clubs are the heart of these communities, aren't they? So when they padlock the gates, which we've seen in those devastating shots already, what's the flow-on effect? Because quite often it's, for many, you wrote about this in your column this week, Richard, it's their one and only outlet. It is their place to socialise, particularly for the people that live on rural communities.
Yeah, I did all my primary school years in a little town called Warwicknabeel out in the Wimmera. It's 4 hours from Melbourne in the west. And I hadn't been back for decades and decades, and I was invited back by the president of the local footy club a couple of years ago. I drove into town with my wife at 1 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. The town was empty. The shops were closing. There was nothing there. And then we drove down to Anzac Park. Everyone was there, the whole town. And it was just a really strong reminder of what it meant for country towns, what it was for me growing up. And, you know, I'm sure everyone has those similar stories. But the whole town was there. I saw people I hadn't seen for 40 years. And it's just the heart and soul of places. And to have that disconnection, as one of our women said in the package, you know, it literally, for some people, is the only time they see other people during the week. They turn up at the footy on Saturday, spend the day there. So I can't imagine the kind of social impact that'll have on small towns particularly.
It's a great point. I mean, it's their outlet. It's where a lot of people meet their partners. It's where kids grow up. I know, speaking from personal experience, I was in a pram at the Peterborough Football Club rooms for the first whole year of my life. We have, as you touched on the grabs that we had a little earlier, we have been to Townsville and Parramatta, and we touched base in Mildura and also Sale this week. And here is some of the locals talking about how the community really relies so much on sport.
We want to be winning and doing our best that we can, but it's more than just that in a regional setting. We work with the police when it comes to, you know, trying to reduce the road toll and drink driving. And we've done walking off the wall within, so around mental health. We work with and celebrate NAIDOC Week and things with MADAS. So it's more than just running around and throwing a netball and kicking a footy.
I'm a firm believer that sport is so much more than getting out on the court and playing, and while all the physical and being active benefits are great to see, sport teaches children to be accepting, to be nice to people they might not otherwise be friends with, to respect their coaches, to respect their teammates, and, you know, that it's okay to be challenged, that it's okay to be corrected, that you want to accept that challenge, push yourself out of your comfort zone and be better.
And that raises a whole heap of then mental health issues, doesn't it, Bridie?
Well, being isolated at home is hard enough, whether you're on your own or you've got three small children. But not being able to be healthy and get that nice plasma cortisol readjustment that we get with excessive vigorous sport, the long endurance sport that brings great sleep patterns. We know there's great documented evidence around minimising anxiety and depression with activity. But the other benefits that were described there around the social benefits of sport, in that we learn skills about, you know, losing, being disappointed, not getting what we want, working with people that are different from us. We know that women who play sport when they're younger go on to be leaders because they've understood how to come through with a solution and keep pushing when things are hard. So these are the things that people are missing out on over this 3, 6 or 12 month shutdown for some of these sports.
We know that professional sport's going to be searching for a bailout, or they have already, the AFL, the NRL, and at some stage, and they will receive that. But is there a genuine concern here that some clubs will fold?
Yeah, I mean, and Richard and I have spoken about club investment, and it's something that we know that, you know, your career club has brought forward to the various forms of investment that you receive, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, look, I was going through our where we get our revenue from, and I mean, subs from players is obviously huge, and juniors, will they come back? Will those, even those senior players who, you know, the last ones to pay their subs every year, are they going to play this year? Are we going to be able to get the money off them? Then there's sponsorship. Typically, local clubs rely heavily on the local pub, local restaurants, local real estate agent. They're all areas that are really hit hard by this. They've closed doors. The money's not going to be there. So we're going to have to be very creative with that. And then there's government grants. I mean, our club has already been promised a rebuild with the football club, cricket club and tennis club of a grandstand. It's a large amount of money. Will that be delivered now, or will that, you know, disappear necessarily in the wage packets that have had to be promised by the government? So I know you've got some insight into that, Bridie.
We saw with federal government and the sports rorts that people became very suspicious around how sporting infrastructure was funded from federal government. And we know that there are, for example, female-friendly facilities funds across Australia. South Australia has them, Victoria has them. And often these are matched by local government. So the question mark then is, does that local government have the capacity to match that funding? Can the grant be continued? And we know construction is an industry that is continuing. And for example, the State Netball Hockey Centre is still under construction there in Parkville. So a lot of that work is continuing safely, which is great. But what we don't want to see is those things taking much longer, or where local government have to make a choice around who they invest in and whether women's teams, for example, are retained in a club.
Yeah, I spoke to one major sports organisation yesterday, and they said, look, what sport loathes doing now is giving just straight cash grants to clubs. They need it to be justified because the money disappears very quickly without getting result for it. But what they want to do is start to invest more in sort of things like lobbying. So they'll go to councils on behalf of clubs or associations and make sure these grants come. Obviously, it's a light touch at the moment, though, because they can't be seen to be going sports above all things like people just having a wage. But that's how they, at the top level, will be trying to help community clubs.
So, Paul, I mean, clubs are obviously highly dependent on government grants for facility upgrades and things like that. There might not be any sports to rot at the moment. Didn't that story disappear very quickly? but what about, I mean...
That was a disgrace. But I think we have to leave that where it is, understand that that happened and make sure it doesn't happen again. I think a couple of the revenue streams you're talking about, there is a great opportunity for the best clubs... And for those who are watching the program today and are thinking about these things, to go out and start making those relationships stronger with the local pizza shop that sponsors your junior club, junior sporting club. Make sure all your members know about the delivery service that this business has during these tough times, and that will make sure that the sponsor will come back. And you can do this with all of your sponsors. With the subscriptions, with fees, I think you've got to have a rethink completely about this. I would suggest that those really early, get them early programs that all the sports run, they should be at cost and ideally for free. And those junior sports clubs that have got a bit of money in the bank, well, now's the time you use that money and start reducing, heavily discounting your fees, if not for this year, for next year, and make sure that the cost isn't an issue. Take cost away, particularly from those families who are isolated from sport even at the best of times. New Australians, those migrant families that struggle to even get the boots and the equipment. So I think you've got to, at that local level, don't worry about the leadership of these major sporting organisations. They'll be flat out saving themselves. At the local organisation, call upon all of the expertise that you have, those local people, even the local secretary and president that haven't been there for a couple of years. Get them back in, thresh out some ideas and make it work for you. And don't wait for someone to come and save you. It's a bit like getting through the coronavirus. There've been good leadership at government levels, at state and federal, but we're going to beat it by acting and contributing ourselves. Don't be a passenger. You've got to help out your local club. Get involved and think of ways to be better when it comes back.
There's also a great chance for clubs to look at the way that they do things. You know, this is a time when things are quiet, and that doesn't always happen during a sporting club. So looking at their committee, how can they tap into the really great skills of the people on their committee? How can they look at whether their fixtures have even been working for them correctly or running different competitions in different ways? So innovation comes from some of these crises, and that can be one of the upsides.
Yeah, there's a lot of wastage in clubs. One area I look at in higher level community clubs is payment for players. I mean, you know, even the supposedly amateur competitions are paying a lot of money for players. I know a lot of cricket clubs pay a lot of money for players that they don't, their only value is they go out and make runs on the weekend. They need to get them more involved in their coaching, in the community of their club, if they're going to pay them that money. There's all sorts of things you can do. So you're right, there could be opportunities to change models at clubs.
Okay, what about kids? Because, so many parents are grappling with this at the moment. How do you keep them fit? How do you keep them connected? You know, we know that they're addicted to their screen time. Maybe we need to ask the question as parents, use the screen time for good rather than evil. I mean, in this modern day and age, you can actually bring a PE teacher into your lounge room. This is an internet sensation. It's called PE with Joe. Have a little look at this.
We're going to spidey squat. So we sit down, look left, look right, come up. Let's go to the floor, lava! Ow! It's been a few webs. Great, I feel fantastic. Who else out there right now feels amazing?
Yes, a few of my female friends put me onto that one. PK, you got... PE with Joe going, or do you just wear the Spider-Man outfit in your lounge room?
I'm not familiar with Joe's work, but he sounds like he's doing a great job. Hey, I'll tell you, there are a lot of things online for fitness. One of the great things on podcasting, by the way, is the ABC's Mindfulness podcast, which has got a great sporting element there for juniors as well. So there's everything out there. All you have to do is search. It's all there for you right now. But what I would like to see more of is these sports stars who are stuck at home, reaching out, maybe doing a video for the kids. I saw Nick Riewoldt did one that was terrific. Aaron Finch with the stump and the golf ball. Now, you'd be very surprised to hear that the kids are more likely to go and do what they're seeing their stars do online than they are listening to me tell them to get off their iPads. So, yeah, I think that's a really good tip. And so for all the sports people out there, we spoke to Kim Green during the week, and they've got a great netball program, a clinic online. So it's all happening online. I'm not sure about the shirtless Pom there, but no doubt we'll be checking him out at some stage.
And what about, the women's leagues, Bridie? Your department recommends funding for female sport upgrades. What impact would funds freeze have, I guess, on female participation? I know from the elite level we look at the NRLW, there's four teams. Already two teams have said, you know what, this $500,000, we don't have it this year. So if two of the four pull out, suddenly that NRLW is in limbo. What will it mean for AFLW? Is that a genuine concern that the younger female participation levels might drop off?
Well, I think this idea of having a bar that professional women's sport needs to bring in revenue is unrealistic this early. I mean, the NRLW's only been going for 1.5 seasons. Similarly with AFLW, we've heard the CEO describe that none of those teams are going to lose their women's team, and that's not the intention at all of the AFL. But we do need to be mindful that there needs to be airspace for these athletes. And with the cutting down of tennis, for example, that's usually the number one sport where we see women getting equal airtime. And Ash Barty, you know, being on our screens, we've seen her hitting a golf ball up against a wall with a cricket bat over the weekend. But sports need to be mindful that this isn't about making the money, it's about visibility of leaders for their women.
Yeah, I'm a big believer that role models in non-traditional women's sport are far more important than in the men's sport. Boys play because they play. They play footy because they've always played. Girls are playing AFL because they see Taylor Harris. They're playing soccer because they see Sam Kerr. They're playing cricket because they see Elise Perry. And those, they're just tremendously important. So to diminish their visibility, I think, would be so wrong from sports. It would be shooting themselves in the foot.
Well, there's still no live sport, but the biggest development of the week came from the NRL, with Rugby League forming the Project Apollo Committee to help relaunch the season. And committee boss Wayne Pearce told the media they are planning a May 28 return.
There's a whole lot of detail that we haven't worked through at the moment because there's so many moving parts. But the key purpose of today was to identify with some certainty when the competition is going to start, because that benefits a whole lot of people. Because we're talking about 7 weeks away, the landscape's changing significantly.
In the role, or I should say in the words of Darryl Kerrigan, tell him he's dreaming, or are they giving fans what they want because fans are crying out for a little bit of hope?
No, I think they're giving broadcasters what they want. I mean, it's pretty clear that Fox are desperate for content. They're bleeding subscribers. But can I read you a quote from the chairman, Peter Volandis, yesterday in The Australian? He said, "It is 7 weeks away. In 7 weeks, there will be some form of relaxation of the social distancing measures." Who's told him that? I mean, I've not heard that from any politician, any leader. Maybe he's got it from a briefing somewhere. If so, why is he leaking it? The whole point of what we're doing now is to not create false expectations, false normalcy, because as soon as that happens, we all know that society will go back to old habits. Sport needs to be a leader in this, not a follower.
I listened to the entire Wayne Pearce media conference, PK. It sounded like pin the tail on the donkey. We've got May 28, but we don't have any other details at all. Jeff Kennett saying this morning in the papers, it's totally irresponsible and the NRL's putting finance well ahead of player safety.
Well, I think that is true, and Operation Apollo was the name they gave to it because they wanted it to be aspirational. Now, I don't have any problems with people preparing for the time that it is okay to play sport again, but I think that's too soon from all the things I've been hearing from the experts that flash up on our TVs and tell us. I think I'm comfortable with sports resuming when it is the same rules as the rest of the community. And I quizzed Wayne Pearce about this on News Breakfast, asking whether he had exemptions. And he said, no, there are exemptions in place because workplaces are continuing, building sites, some offices. But those workplaces have got social distancing rules, and they've got their own rules. just even the nature of rugby league breaks those rules. So, yes, they're true. At some stage, maybe not 7 weeks, at some stage those rules will be changed. That would be the time to then go on and start resuming business as normal. But until then, I think it's too early to start talking like that, even though they're trying to be ambitious. You can't be big and tough to beat this thing. You can't do what you do on the field to beat coronavirus. You need to do what everyone else is doing, listen to the experts, and then resume when it's okay to do so.
Okay, well, of the two sports Peter Vallandis is running at the moment, one's leading the push to get back in the NRL and the other one is the only one that's powering on in horse racing. Crowdless Royal Randwick going ahead yesterday, this time last year, was standing room only for this race, the Queen Elizabeth Stakes. It was the farewell to Winx, but instead an England double because Adabe, ridden by Tom Marquand, was the big result for the day out at Randwick. But, Richard, the biggest horse racing story this morning is a sad one because the it horse of the late 90s, Might and Power, has died earlier this morning. It won all three. It won the Caulfield, it won the Cox Plate, and it won the Melbourne Cup. It was a wonderful front runner, and of course, all about Jim Cassidy on board.
Yeah. Have there been many better named horses than Might and Power? It's just such a powerful horse that it'd, you know, bolt to the front and hang on. I mean, that Caulfield Cup where the jockey was told, you know, hold it back, and he just let it go, and it won by lengths. And then the famous finish in the Melbourne Cup, of course, where it just got across the line, Doremus on its back. I might have had a couple of shekels on it that day and been one of those who was cursing when the jockey, Doremus's jockey, jumped out of the saddle, so proclaiming his victory. I'm like, I've done my money. But yeah, that was a great horse. And then following the Cox Plate, that we all remember the owner, Nick Moraitis, dancing out on the track afterwards, making a bit of a goose of himself. But it was a great horse, a great story horse, but most of all, just such a well-named horse.
A very special horse to many people, particularly Pumper. Let's go for a trip down memory lane. This is the final stages of the 1997 Melbourne Cup.
Might and Power the leader, Doremus trying hardest, coming at him. Might and Power and Doremus. Doremus getting to Might and Power, they hit the line, photo, oh! Nothing between them, Doremus or Might and Power in a close go.
Wasn't it outstanding to see the big G celebrate the way he did for running second in that great race, the Melbourne Cup? I reckon he nearly fell through his underpants and hung himself when the number went up. When we actually got back close to the enclosure, he come up and put his arm on my shoulder and said, good on your pump. And I appreciated that. I appreciate it till today.
Nice way to finish the show. Nice, beautiful little bit of sportsmanship. Okay, final tip or observation?
I've changed my mind. We've gone too early with the Olympic cancellation. There's so many great indoor events. We could have just held it virtually. Here's the early contender for gold medal in the 15 metres kitchen climb. I love this.
Genuine question, can you do rock climbing? We know in Victoria you can't play golf, but in New South Wales you can. Can you rock climb, Bridie?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I think it also puts a safety risk. If you're out in the Arapiles, for example, and you're on your own, so I think it's much safer to do it here in the kitchen. Get an apple when you can.
That gives you something to try this afternoon when you get home. Bridie.
My hope is that when we re-engage community sport, that clubs and associations are really mindful of making their doors open to everyone. Aboriginal people, people with disability, LGBTQI community, new arrivals and women and girls. We don't want just the same old delivery model that started 100 years ago. It's time to be new and modern and innovative.
Great to have you in this morning. Love the insights. I have noticed in the last few weeks there's a lot of cyclists out and I've thought to myself, are we developing out there the next Cadell or the next Bridie? PK, final tip, final observation.
Watch for Michael Matthews, by the way. He's racing online infrequently too, so that'll be good. I've changed my mind. I'm going to say my final observation is hats off to yourself, Kelly, Bridie and Richard, and this program. Share it as far as we can around all local clubs. Even as you were speaking, I'm thinking I'm not doing enough to stay in contact with those people who I would otherwise bump into on the hill watching the local footy on a Saturday afternoon. And I know that is one of the only times they get to go out and enjoy people's company. So thank you. That's a good reminder. That's what I'm going to do today.
Okay. Thanks, PK. You're welcome back any time if you take the Collingwood poster down behind you. That is the program
we haven't got
for
many.
The week. We're going to continue with our special Offsiders editions over the coming weeks with plenty of special guests coming up. Enjoy the rest of your Easter Sunday and good luck keeping the kids physically active within the confines of your house, especially after eating all those eggs this morning. It certainly is proving a challenge for many parents. Happy Easter.